Yes, much to be learnt, much that could be said, much that can't be said in 25 minutes or so. But I'll do my best nonetheless. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Nice to see you all. Great, it's up there. So this afternoon, yes, we're continuing our series, Jesus Speaks Today. And so a quick reminder that this series is aiming to help us as followers of Jesus know how to respond to some of the contemporary issues of our day by drawing on the life and teachings of Jesus. And this series sows right into our vision of wanting to introduce people to Jesus and proclaim Jesus, to follow in his ways. It's all up there, it's good. And seeing lives transformed. When it comes to contemporary issues of our day, if we can point to Jesus and represent him in our behaviors, in our attitudes, and in our actions, then I believe we'll see people drawn to Jesus and see lives transformed. As I said in the introduction to the series, our aim isn't to tell you what to think about immigration or what to think about economics or what to think about health and social care, etc. Our goal is to point to Jesus and ask questions of Jesus in terms of how he might respond to the issues we face today. And for that, we turn to Scripture and try to see the world through the lens of Jesus. And I trust that today, as I share, we can do the same. So far in the series, we've explored Jesus and being human, Jesus and health and social care, Jesus and immigration, and Jesus and economics. And today I'm going to be speaking on Jesus and conflict. And my subtitle is, Blessed Are the Peacemakers. Original title. Hopefully that one will catch on. Of course, we know that from the Gospels, don't we? Blessed Are the Peacemakers. And we'll come to that in a short while. Before I get into my message, I just want to say that I know for some, a message on conflict may trigger various emotions in you, perhaps for many of us. I've tried to form and develop my talk in a way which I hope is sensitive to the challenges that many of us or some of us may have experienced. And I don't plan on going into detail of different types of conflict, instead focusing on the posture Jesus would have us take. If, however, anything in this message is triggering and you need to step out for some time, then please, please do that. I have no problem at all if you just want to take some time to go out of the room. Take what time you need. I'm sure someone will make you a cup of tea as well if you need it. Again, I'm not saying this because I plan on tackling some really challenging topics. I'm not. However, we never know what's going to trigger things for us. So just to be clear, that's absolutely fine if you need to go out should anything trigger you. And for the rest of us, there you go. If you're getting bored of what I'm saying, you've got an out there, haven't you? Please don't all go. I'm not that secure. Okay, so by show of hands, anyone here like playing board games or, you know, things like charades or things like that? Anyone like playing board games, things like that? Any of you play with family members, particularly siblings? Any of you experienced any conflict? Yes. What about watching or playing sports? Any sort of competitive types here? We're watching, playing? Any of you experience conflict when it comes to playing or watching sports? Yeah. Maybe not as many as games by the sounds of it, but for sure. Perhaps the sort of conflict that might arise when a friend of yours, you know, as a Chelsea fan, serves you a cup of tea in a West Ham mug, Ben. Oh. Love my brother. Very good. These are, of course, trivial examples and experiences where we might, well, laugh when we recall those moments of conflict. I suspect all of us have experienced less trivial examples or forms of conflict. And I suspect on multiple occasions, perhaps with a friend, a spouse or a family member, or a boss or a work colleague, maybe a neighbor or an inconsiderate driver. Perhaps you've experienced a form of conflict which has caused you long-term suffering. These are conflicts that we might have experienced firsthand. But what about other sorts of conflicts? What other types of conflicts? Such as nations at war, we think of Israel and Palestine, Russia, Ukraine, or civil wars in Syria, Sudan, Yemen, to name just a few places where there are currently conflicts. It's not lost on me too that on a day that we share this message on conflict is also a day when we remember those who have given their lives. It's fair to say that I think we're surrounded by conflict. Whether we feel the conflict and its effects firsthand, or whether we stand at a distance and observe, conflict, it would seem, has many categories. And conflict has been around since the beginning of creation, and in fact, might even be true to say that conflict preceded the fall with Satan the accuser. Think about that. Conflict, it would seem, is unavoidable. So as Christians then, what are we to do with conflict? How do we behave, or how should we respond when we see or when we experience conflict? This series is called Jesus Speaks Today, precisely because we believe that Jesus' life and his teachings speak as loudly and profoundly today as they ever have. And so where else should we turn but to Jesus? I want to suggest that Jesus was not afraid of conflict. And by that, I don't mean he was going around looking for a fight. But he was willing to enter into conflict for the sake of justice. But what does Jesus have to say about people who follow him? How people should follow him, should respond when faced with conflict. In the Gospel of Matthew, we find a section of Jesus' teaching that we call the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' ethics of what his kingdom looks like and how followers of Jesus are to embody these ethics. In the first part of the Sermon on the Mount, we have the Beatitudes, and in chapter 5, verses 9, we read, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." What does Jesus mean by a peacemaker? Does Jesus mean just keep the peace, stay away from conflict? If there's conflict or tension, get out of there, just leave him to it. I'm sure many of us said it. I know I have to the kids. Don't get involved. Or did Jesus mean keep the peace no matter what? Do whatever you need to do. Use force if you need to. Just keep the peace. Don't let anyone upset the apple cart. Deal with it and keep the peace. Or does Jesus mean something else? The word peacemakers means to make peace. Or you could say being a peace doer. It's a verb, it's a doing word, it's active. It's something that needs to be created. It takes work. Making peace is about making complete or making whole. Restoring to wholeness. Isn't that nice? Restoring to wholeness. Tim Mackey of the Bible Project says this: biblical peace is not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of harmony. Biblical peace is not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of harmony. The late Archbishop Desmond Tutu said this: peace is not a goal to be reached, but a way of life to be lived. Active. Peace doers, peacemakers. We can see from this that being a peacemaker can't simply be about just keep the peace, man. Don't get involved, stay out of the way type of peace. In fact, it seems that the word peacemaker implies being present in situations of conflict and or unrest in order to bring peace, bring that wholeness. However, it's a big however. What I would say is that there may well be times when the wisest thing to do, the most loving thing for you, the most loving thing for someone else, and even the most Christ-like thing to do is to remove yourself from a situation of conflict. Perhaps especially if you are involved in that conflict. So please do not hear me say that you must keep yourself in a place of conflict no matter what. I'm most definitely not saying that. And please keep that in mind as we continue. So there, the blessed are the peacemakers is the kingdom ethic or principle. But what are we to do when conflict comes our way? And what might being a peacemaker actually look like? Does it look like a passive presence? Allowing ourselves to be subject to others without response? Does it look like I've got bigger weapons than you and I'm not afraid to use them? Or is there another way? Well, just a few verses later in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus gives us some case studies of conflict and for opportunities to, one, not withdraw, two, to call out injustice, and three, to broker peace. Jesus says this in Matthew 5, 38 to 42. You have heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. This short section of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount begins with, you have heard it said, eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. Some of you know that this is a quote from the Old Testament law. And the purpose of this law was not about achieving maximum vengeance, but rather it was about avoiding escalation in conflict. The idea is that while justice requires retribution or punishment for wrongdoing, this law only enabled equal punishment to the crime committed. Retribution could only be limited to the original injury, therefore preventing vengeance from spiraling out of control. Sounds quite reasonable and sensible. However, but we probably noted that Jesus said, you have heard it said, meaning he's going to give us a new ethic, a new way of doing things for his kingdom and for peacemaking. And this new ethic takes the original law to a new level, still bringing about justice, but in a creative way that refuses to issue harm in return for harm. And as we go through these, just remember, they're examples from the first century, with cultural norms and practices different to our own. Not any more acceptable, but different to our own. These are not a blueprint for how we are to do things, but they serve as illustrations for us to think about and consider. The first case study Jesus uses is this. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. A first reading of this might seem to suggest that Jesus is asking his followers to remain passive in situations of harm being inflicted on them. He is not. In the Roman world, a slap to the right cheek would be done with the back of a right hand. A forceful insult and a way of dominating and humiliating someone. It was an attack to their honor and dignity as a human being. instead of instructing an equal retribution, Jesus says to turn the other cheek also. In other words, stand your ground and offer them the left cheek, which in that day would force the aggressor to slap you with an open right hand. This would mean striking you as an equal, not a lesser. It forces the aggressor to treat you like a fellow human being, even if it costs you. One's choice to turn the other cheek declares that the aggressor has no power in regard to your dignity and honor, because dignity and honor come from God alone. The second case study Jesus gives us is, and if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. It was against the law in ancient Israel to take a poor person's coat, as it was also their blanket for keeping warm at night. Jesus' creative response to injustice here is that if someone sues you and takes your shirt as collateral for a loan, give them your coat also. Doing this would expose the person's vulnerability, but yet also the injustice of the greedy person would be visible to all. The third case study Jesus gives us: if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. In Jesus' day, the Roman soldiers could force anyone to carry their packs for them up to a mile. Forced labor. Jesus' creative response is not to only to carry it for a mile, but carry the soldier's pack for a second mile. The soldier will likely treat you like a slave the first mile, but by carrying his pack a second mile, you claim your equal status as a human, treating him like a friend and exercising radical generosity by choosing to go the extra mile. Challenging. Immediately following this section of scripture, Jesus then exhorts his followers to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Oh, challenging. I should probably be clear that for Jesus, being a peacemaker doesn't necessarily mean the absence of conflict altogether. Sometimes being a peacemaker could mean suffering for the follower of Jesus. This teaching of Jesus that we find in the Sermon on the Mount invites us to active peacemaking in conflict. Neither is a passive or iron fist approach to conflict and peacemaking the way of the kingdom of Jesus. Instead, this passage would suggest a creative approach to bring justice, an approach which is not about equal restitution, but about exposing injustice with radical generosity and love for your neighbor, even your enemies, by kingdom ethics. How would our view of conflicts around the world change if we looked through the lens of Jesus? So then, or so what? What does being peacemakers mean and look like for you and for I as we go about our lives? We might think it unlikely that any of us here will be before heads of state brokering peace agreements. I mean, if you want to give it a go, then by all means, but perhaps not. Though I would suggest it's maybe more likely than we realize. At least being in global or political environments where we can help bring about peace in context of conflict. Even in Forge, we have two people that I know of who I would suggest are being peacemakers or peace doers in a global and political context. Both of them are women in churches, in our churches in London. One who is working in 10 Downing Street as the Prime Minister's Special Advisor for Faith, Communities and Civil Society. She's been to speak here. and another who has held a pastoral role in UK Parliament, and I think she still does, but who also has a role at the Centre for International Justice and Reconciliation, which involves a presence at the United Nations. Even as I was preparing for this and just double-checking their roles, I was like, wow, wow. Amazing opportunities and amazing people exercising a peacemaking role in our society and indeed the wider world. In community churches connected, we've had people involved in local politics. We may not always align with their political party of choice, but they've been there as followers of Jesus in that arena, doing their best to bring the shalom, the peace of God, in the places they represent. And we've had people in and from this church working with people in other nations to bring peace in areas of conflict. Many of us will be aware of the work Andy and Dimac were involved in for years with trying to bring reconciliation between Israelis and Palestinians. And locally, they've also spent many years, I think, helping foster healthy dialogue between people of different faiths, and particularly Muslims and Christians, and peacemakers. I know there are others in this community who've sat with, who've walked with, and supported family members who are in conflict. You're peacemakers. You're bringing peace in those situations. So whether we're witnessing the global conflict of nations or a conflict between friends or family members, we, as followers of Jesus, are called to be peacemakers, peace doers in those areas of conflict. As we said earlier, conflict can take many forms. Our responsibility as followers of Jesus is to live in a way which represents the kingdom of Jesus, and that means being a peacemaker. What might that look like in a disagreement with a spouse or another family member or friend? What might that look like if we find ourselves in conflict with the ideologies or policies of local or national political leaders? It might indeed mean calling them out or holding them to account. But the way of Jesus is to do this with love and not aiming to tear them down. Can I say that it might be tempting for many of us to address conflict on social media when we're safe behind a screen and somewhat detached from the human being we're addressing. Perhaps the way of Jesus is that when members of our families or friends are in conflict, rather than withdrawing, that instead we step in as an ambassador for Jesus and an agent of peace. Perhaps when we're on social media and we see a post that is heaping abuse on someone, that rather than stay silent and withdraw, we act as those agents of peace. Maybe in your workplace there is a conflict between work colleagues. Maybe rather than staying silent, we call on the wisdom of spirit to broker peace and reconciliation between work colleagues. I'd love it if we could go away today considering how we can be peacemakers in places of conflict. I'd love even more if that we could hear stories in the coming weeks of how you and we have been able to broker peace in situations. Perhaps you'd be willing to share your story with me if you have one, or in the next few weeks. I'd love to hear it, and maybe we can share it at a service sometime. And I know I've given many answers. I know I've not given many answers to exactly what brokering peace might look like. I guess in part, that is the nature of conflict. There are no easy answers and no roadmaps, no three easy steps to conflict resolution. If there was, then wouldn't that be good? But I do think that if we look through the lens of Jesus, and indeed to the person of Jesus, then we might find that being makers of peace has something to do with humility, that it has something to do with self-sacrifice, has something to do with seeking justice, love, and compassion, not only for the ones that we love, but also for our enemies. How will you be a peacemaker this week? Thank you.